that needs to happen every day. I suspect that's not just a once-off. I suspect that's kind of a remembering. Because sometimes we forget why we were born. Paul wrote a letter to a church in Ephesus thousands of years ago. And this was a church that was a little fragile. And they were struggling for their sense of identity. And he wrote a letter, and in that letter, he prayed. He prayed for this church. He prayed for this community. And Diana Butler Bass wrote a book called Christianity After Religion. And it's a book that really tries to wrestle with how radically the landscape of religion, how radically the landscape of Christianity is changing before our very eyes. Trying to wrestle with the declining, as we celebrate new members today, that's not happening many places. You know, as she's wrestling with the declining membership in mainline Protestantism and the fastest rising religion on the census form. Is none at the moment. So she says, the way of the future, the hope of the future, is to communicate the fullness of God's love. Not an anemic love, but a love so full, it will transform who you are. And why you are, and what you do in the world. And she wrote that book this year, but I suspect Paul, a couple thousand years ago, prayed the very same hope from Ephesians 3. For this reason, I kneel before God. God the Creator, from whom the whole family in heaven and on earth derives its name. I pray that out of God's glorious riches, God may strengthen you with power through God's Spirit in your most inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And I pray that you, being rooted and grounded in the fullness of God's love, may have power together with all the saints to grasp how wide, how long, how high, how deep is the love of Christ. And to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with the fullness of God. Now to God, who is able to do immeasurably more, catch this. Somebody is trying to catch it somewhere else. So hopefully they can hear this too. Now to God, who is able to do immeasurably more than we can ask or even imagine, according to God's power that is at work within us. Wow. I love the story of the hunter. One of my favorite stories, the hunters went to Alaska. They went to Alaska every year. They went to the same spot every year. They had all of their gear, their guns, their all this sort of stuff. They were moose hunting. And you could only go to this remote place by a plane. The plane would take them there, would unload the two hunters, unload all their gear, and say, I'll be back in a week. So 1 week later, the planes, the pilots, you know, flying over where he said he would meet the hunters. And there he sees the hunters, sees all their gear, and the two biggest moose you've ever seen in your life. You know, he lands the plane, and he said, hey, fellas, there's no way we're getting you the gear and these moose on a plane and be able to take off. And the pilot, one of the hunters said, well, you know, the pilot last year, we come here every year. The pilot last year did. Pilot said, okay. So he loaded the guys on, loaded their gear on, somehow loaded these two moose on, and they took off and sputter, sputter, and looked like they were just about to make it, and right in the side of the hill. You know, smoke, and everybody was kind of coming to, and the pilot asked, where are we? And one of the hunters said, we're about a mile east from where we crashed last year. You know, life, it seems to me life can kind of feel like that at times, that we kind of keep going through the motions, maybe even keep making the same mistakes. Sometimes it can seem that the goal of life, the goal of today, is to get through the day. Now hear me clearly first and foremost. Sometimes because of the challenges we face, survival is victory. But sometimes it seems like the goal that we have is just simply make it through the day. Check off the things that are on our to-do list. Do the things that we did yesterday. Why'd you get out of bed this morning? I've reached that place in my life where my bladder is in more control of my life than my overarching sense of purpose. But what a difference it makes to ask yourself the question, why did you get out of bed this morning? And do you have a reason to get out of bed that's larger than yourself? Do you have a reason to get out of bed that's big enough for your soul? To fill your soul. I think of Martin Luther King Jr. You know, the people gathered, the hundreds and thousands gathered. He didn't say, I have a good idea. He didn't say, I have a business plan. He didn't say, I have a few objectives. He said, I have a dream. I have a dream, and that dream is that my child and your child will one day walk hand in hand. And the passion of that dream allowed him to face the most insurmountable odds. And the passion of that dream continues to live in the hearts of so, so very many. Simon Sinek, who knows? A leadership expert. Somehow, somebody is quoting me this very morning and said, Stephen... But he created something called the Golden Circle. I've shared this with you before, that it's incredibly powerful, I think, where he says that most people get up in the morning and they kind of ask themselves the question, what am I going to do today? And then how am I going to do it? You know, what's in store for today and how am I going to get through it? He suggests very few people get to the center of the circle. Why? Why did I get up today? And he suggests as people of faith, where I suggest as people of faith, the people of faith, we are inside out people, not outside in people. We are people that begin in the center of the circle with a sense of why, rooted and grounded in that love. And then, what and how? The power of this to me was most visibly expressed by Viktor Frankl, who survived Nazi Germany and the Holocaust. And he observed why some people managed to survive and others didn't. And he noticed it had nothing to do, very little to do with gender, with age, with physical strength. What he discovered was those who survived took the little bread that they had and they shared it with the elderly, the sick, children. Those who didn't survive took the little bread that they had and they asked themselves, what am I going to do today? How am I going to get through this? And out of fear, they kept it for themselves. Those who survived had that sense of why I am here in the first place. I am here to love. And I have this little parcel. But what I can do with this parcel may save a life. And that why, the power of that why, that love, proved to be stronger than even the most evil we can possibly imagine. Paul prayed that we might be strengthened in our inner being by being rooted and grounded in that love that's beyond anything we can possibly comprehend. We're introducing a new mission statement this morning, and you can see it on the front of your bulletin. Creating spaces of grace to cultivate hope, healing, and purpose. And by new mission statement, as I said earlier, I don't think it's a new mission statement, as it's just the next unfolding to the mission that we share together as people of faith in this unique place, at this unique time, in this unique town, to this unique world at the moment. The previous mission statement for the last 6 years, I should test you right now, shouldn't I? But I won't. It was sharing the unconditional love and compassion of Jesus. And what we're seeking to do in this, in many ways, in some ways, is to crystallize that, to sharpen that, to focus that, asking the question, what unique gifts do we as a community of faith have to offer to the world right now? A mission statement, the only reason we have a mission statement is because God has a mission. And our mission is actually to share and partner with God's mission in the world. Saint-Exupéry, in this marvelous little book called Little Prince, says, loving is not to gaze at one another, but to look outward in the same direction. That's mission. So this morning, I kind of want to just introduce it. Over the next four Sundays, we're going to just unfold it and take layers off of it and engage ourselves with it and see where we sit with it. Jenny shared a couple weeks ago that we had this great opportunity to sit in a circle with Parker Palmer, someone I've read for 20 years, and a hero of mine. Incredible experience. And she shared that he talked about the tragic gap, living in the tragic gap. And the tragic gap is that space between the harsh realities of what is and the possibilities of what might be. Of what you know can be. But we live in the tragic gap between those two spaces. She shared, we often spin off in one of two ways. We spin off in the possibilities, in idealism, in Pollyanna, you know, I'm sure everything's going to be okay. Or we spin off in despair, the harsh realities, despair and cynicism. What he says is action actually happens in the tragic gap. So the question he asks is, how do you stand firm in the tragic gap? How do you stand rooted and grounded in love in the tragic gap? How do you fully show up in the tragic gap? And he says there's three things you need. You need to believe change is possible. To trust change is possible. And identity and purpose. Shel Silverstein said, listen to the mustn'ts, child. The shouldn'ts, the won'ts, the impossibles, the can'ts. Listen to the never haves. Then listen to me. Listen closely, my child. Anything can happen. Anything can be. We ask a group of children, how many of you can sing? How many raise their hand? And they did. You ask a group of children, how many can dance? How many raise their hand? They don't raise their hand, they show you. You ask a group of children, how many of you can paint? How many raise their hand? All of them. You ask us, by what criteria are you going to be evaluated? Who are you going to be measuring me to? I wonder if you ask a child, can we end poverty? Yes. Can we heal the planet? Yes. Can we end war? Yes. And something happens. That hope gets beat out of us. And we spin off to despair and cynicism. To stand in the tragic gap is to trust. Change is possible. And to have that sense of purpose. Desmond Tutu, when he was a priest, he used to teach a Sunday school in South Africa. And he was asking his teenage students the voice of heaven in the celebration of baptism when Jesus was baptized. What did the voice of heaven say? And most of the kids got it right. One child, one young person got it beautifully wrong. The voice of heaven says, you are a beloved child of God. Now go act like it. I love what Peg said, where she said, I've come to realize that God has loved me all the time. Now I claim it for myself. And the why, the rooted and grounded of love is going now and acting like it. All of us. Taking a sabbatical starting July 15th. It's not for 7 months, as the rumor is. I wish, I ask, can I do that? It's for 3.5 months, July 15th. I return November 4th. Part of my call when I first came to this church 7 years ago, part of this call was to have a sabbatical after 7 years. Most people, the Alban Institute, which takes care of clergy, suggests that clergy have sabbaticals after 7 years. Next Sunday is the 25th anniversary of my ordination. Next Sunday. Go figure. I got it. I was ordained when I was 10. Who knew they gave 10-year-olds ordination? But 25 years. And in 25 years, for a variety of reasons I won't get into, I've never had a sabbatical. So this is my first opportunity. Creating spaces of grace to cultivate healing. Hope, healing, and purpose. I'm excited for this particular time because I'm going to go and surrender myself to spaces of grace. I'm going to Australia, where I began my ministry 25 years ago. Because what I want to do is rekindle my why. It's there. But I just want to rekindle it. I want to root and ground myself in love and that, just rekindle that sense of why I was called on this journey in the first place. I'm going to Scotland. I'm going to the Iona community for healing. Because after 25 years, I'm a little tired. David White, in his beautiful poem, Sweet Darkness, says, if your eyes are tired, the world is tired also. And I don't want to spin off into despair and cynicism. I want to stand firmly and show up fully in the tragic gap. So here's the deal. November 4th, because I've been asked at least a dozen times, are you coming back? Good news for some, maybe not good news for others, but I am. And I'm coming back. Thank you. I don't want any ambiguity about that. I'm not only coming back, I'm coming back excited. I'm so excited about this new mission statement. I'm so excited about the journey that we're having and the journey that we're heading towards. And I'm not only coming back, I know I'm coming back renewed, re-energized, and refocused to stand firmly with you. Stand firmly with you, rooted and grounded in love. In that tragic gap, daring to trust that change is possible. Paul's prayer, God's Spirit working within us, can accomplish more than we can imagine. We come to this table today. Parker Palmer said, to stand in the tragic gap, you need a strong sense of identity. 25 years ago, my last assignment in seminary, it was a worship class. We had to go to 12 different worship experiences and reflect on it. You might find it hard to believe that it was Sunday and the paper was due Monday. And I still had one more place to go. And it was a Sunday afternoon and the worship service was in the evening. It was a metropolitan community church. It was a small church on the north side of Chicago. The mission of this church was to be a safe place for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered persons and anyone else who felt excluded by the church. I didn't want to go. Mainly because there was a great football game on. But I had to go. So I sat in the back row to observe, not participate, to critically observe, tell them how they should have done worship. And it came time for communion. I wasn't going to participate, but there were only 25 people. So when people were invited forward, it was kind of obvious that I would be sitting there on my hands. So I went forward. And the gentleman with the bread gently touched my arm and said, "What's your name?" I said, "Stephen." He looked me in the eyes in a way that I don't think I had been seen. And he said, "Stephen, you are a beloved child of God. Loved unconditionally by God. Eat and be filled with that love." And the woman beside him said, "Stephen, you are a beloved child of God, loved unconditionally by God. Drink deep of that acceptance." And I went back to my pew and I just sobbed uncontrollably. And this elderly woman who was sitting at the end kind of scooted her way down. And she just non-obtrusively placed her hand on my shoulder and didn't say a word. That day, I knew why I was born. That's the love that welcomes you to this table. May we receive it. The offering will be received.